And welcome to Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want. Just do call me a White Sox fan. You better believe it. And I want to thank Papa Joe Chevalier for hopefully getting some good wishes for the White Sox for tonight. I don't know. Tell you, I'm a diehard White Sox fan, but yeah, it's not looking too good. You know, I was hoping for the Angels, I know, because, you know, the Yankees turn to different kinds of beasts once they get into the playoffs. I did not want the White Sox going up against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. I'm sorry, but it's the way it is. You know, and then I wanted the Angels, and I go and check the record for the Sox and the Angels, and it turns out the Angels have been kicking the Sox's asses all season long. But we do have a gift right now for Jimmy Diggs, the owner of LV Rocks, a little gift from Harry Carey.
I will take four times. Fisker Hargrove. Now the signal, Art Tanana. Here's the pitch. Way back. The wind is might hold it up. Home run! Holy cow! Against the wind. Carl confessed. Puts the White Sox ahead. Listen to the crowd.
I think he hit it so good. I thought for a moment, watching Rice, he was going to catch it.
There's the scoreboard exploding. Carlton Fisk has hit his third.
And that was... Thank you for the late Harry Carey making a guest appearance on the program. Same thing with Jimmy Pearsall. And I think we have one more lined up for Diggs. It's a classic. It's a classic. Here we go.
They come from the stretch. Here comes the pitch. A swing and a ground ball to second. Fletcher has it. He throws the Lions at first, and that's a White Sox winner. The last ball game at Old Comiskey Park, finishing up 80 years of history in this stadium, goes to the White Sox. Come out onto the field to congratulate the players.
And thank you for Scott Fletcher and Dwayne Hagan and whoever the hell else it was, Lauren Brown, I think, doing the play-by-play for the Sox back then. So anyway, I want a little gift to the fans listening from the Papa Joe show. Now listening to my show. Usually I do a little news and comment, but I am a White Sox fan. I'm going to get that out of the way right now. Actually, Harry Carey got his big break, actually, with the White Sox seeing and taking me out to the ballgame. It wasn't the Cubs. It was the White Sox that gave his break seeing and taking me out to the ballgame. So, and I challenge anybody that Harry Carey did the most in his career with the White Sox than he ever did with the Cubs. So, we'll see what happens. But anyway, I'm going to get into the program tonight. I had scheduled on the program Jim Gilchrist. He was the founder of the Minuteman Citizen Corps, and anyway, he's running for Congress, and I got an email I posted on the LV Rocks board about from his scheduler, Ann, I think it was, that he couldn't make it because he's filming a commercial, and he couldn't make it, yada, yada, yada. So anyway, I went ahead and canceled him, or he canceled on me, so I had no choice, you know what I'm saying? So I brought on Peter Isley. He's going to be with us in just a few minutes. He's the founding member and on the national board of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. So we'll bring him on. And in the second hour, he'll be Nick Douglas. He's the editor of the Blogebrity, like a celebrity, but about blogs. I guess it's like People Magazine with bloggers. And who spends half this day online eating up the news from over 100 blogs, hundreds of posts a day. So we'll see what he has to say. And then in the last half hour of the program, will be Justin from the Dunkelfant. We'll be along with his political report, and maybe we'll have a book report from Mark here about the Battlestar Galactica magazine, so we'll see if we get his book report in. So that was his assignment from last week. We'll see if he comes through with his assignment or not. And we'll grade him on his on his assignment here. And then I want to mention about the earthquake in Pakistan. Of course, it killed 10,000 people, and now, of course, we're rushing aid over there to help them out and everything. And I guess we should be doing that, but it just kind of bothers me. We still got people suffering in the Gulf Coast. We also have people suffering in Florida still from the hurricanes from a year ago, yet we're sending aid to the people in Pakistan. So, I still think our priorities are a lot of whack, but that's just me. And I want to mention that last night I was at the Wake Up America Foundation meeting, and this was over at the Cashman Field Center on the third floor. They have these little banquet rooms up there, and I was up there with them. I met Mr. Mark Edwards. It was nice talking to him. I met his producer, Judy. She's a nice lady and very professional. And Michael Cutler was there. He's a former INS agent, and he's been testifying for Congress. He's been on Lou Dobbs about 100 times, and really a lot of issues about the illegal immigration and the illegal aliens and everything like that. So I was glad to meet them, all those people, especially Mark Edwards. I mean, just he takes command of that room when he takes the microphone. Just it floored me. And I also met Jim Dallas. I didn't really get a chance to come face-to-face with him, but I saw he gave a little speech before the festivities began last night, and then he left before I get a chance to get around the room. I think he ran away from me or something. We'll see. And anyway, Jim Dallas got that deep voice. You know, if you ever listen to KDWN here in Las Vegas, he's got this is Jim Dallas, you know, really a deep, deep voice, like Martin Savage from CNN. So, but anyway, it was nice to see him. So, and then next week, I'm going to have Richard Vague. He's the founding associate of American Respect. And they're the ones that did those ads last year. I remember that about our foreign policy, how we need to change our foreign policy, more of a proactive foreign policy and all that. So they're the ones put those ads in those papers last year at USA Today. I think they had one in the Review Journal here in Las Vegas. Anyway, he's agreed to be on the program. So he runs a bank and everything else. So we're quite lucky. I may also throw some discretionary funding my way for the program here. You never know. So, and then also Matt Unger from the American Centrist Party, he'll be on as well. So, and so with that being said, we'll move on to the news to you. And I want to mention first. Actually, I forgot all the White Sox business. I forgot all the usual stuff here. Every Wednesday on LVRocks.com. At Wednesdays at 7. And the show's podcasts on LVRocks.com. Click on podcasts in the upper left-hand corner of the screen. It takes you all the podcasts and all the programs are listed there. And the show is archived over in SpankWagon.net. And they have a program every Friday at 7 p.m. Pacific time till 9 p.m. Pacific time. So I thank them for podcasting the program. And also, I like to see all my loyal listeners in the chat room. That's all right. I make up for it in the podcast. That's all right. I could talk to the choir. Anyway, I want to talk about the Forbes 400 came out a couple weeks ago, and I just want to mention it real quick. Of course, Bill Gates is worth $46 billion, and he's 47 years old. Man, oh, man. Warren Buffett, $36 billion from Omaha, Nebraska. Paul Allen, we're $22 billion. I mean, this is, you know, it makes you sick, doesn't it? Of course, all the Walmart people in there. Helen's worth $20 billion. Jim Walton's worth another $20.5 billion. He's only worth $20.5 billion, excuse me. John T. Walton is $20.5 billion. And this new guy here, who's Robeson Walton, I don't know who he is. Robeson, I don't know what kind of name is that. 20 point. Yeah, all we're the same. One day, just lump them all in together. I guess, I don't know. And who else is in here? Forrest Myers Jr. is worth $10.4 billion, and of course his father. I think it's the same one. I don't know. 72. I remember Forrest Myers used to live here in Henderson, and I thought he had passed away. Unless I got the, you know, this is Junior, so obviously maybe a senior who passed away. So, and Oprah, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, among the five celebrities who made it onto the new Forbes magazine 400 richest people in America list. Lifestyle queen Martha Stewart, she's worth $970 million. Her fortune makes her the fifth richest celebrity on the list, while Winfrey comes in fourth with $1.4 billion. Wow. That woman taking that little TV show and turned to a powerhouse. I mean, the studio, Harpo, and all that, but basically it's the TV show, but man, oh man. Property tycoon turned reality star Donald Trump ties with Spielberg for second with $2.7 billion. How the hell can Trump have that kind of money when he went bankrupt with his casinos? That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, well, Lucas tops them all with $3.5 billion only. Of course, you know, Bill Gates is $50 billion, so... Anyway, that was interesting, I thought. And then we had this from last week, too. Some of this news I didn't get to, but a fire truck absent on social call. This hook and ladder truck, this town in Wisconsin, and the only hook and ladder truck they had was not available because it was visiting the chief's son's wedding miles away. Police Chief Jeff Rolfe denied responsibility on Wednesday for the fire department's only ladder truck being used at the August 20th wedding of his son in Lake Geneva, about 25 miles away from its assigned fire station. Oh, he had nothing to do with it, but it happened to be there at his son's wedding. I mean, you idiot. I did not have anything to do with the vehicle coming to my son's wedding, said Chief Jeff Rolfe to interview. I was at my son's wedding as a father groom. It was my job that day. Yeah, BS, right? At issue is a, according to the report here from the Associated Press, the fire truck broke down, of course, and issue is a $1,200 and $14 repair bill for the fire truck. The cooling system of its engine broke down. It was being driven back from Lake Geneva. It couldn't happen. You know, they deserved it. You know, something like that. Of course, the father and the chief had nothing to do with the fire, the hook and ladder being at the his son's wedding. Of course not. And then we had this story, well, these flu stories going around. We had this new deadly dog flu going around, too. I mean, this is from Wheeling, West Virginia. A Wheeling Island racetrack said they've heard of this new mutation of the drug flu and are taking more precautions. According to reports, the flu has been identified in seven states, including West Virginia. And at times, entire kennels were shut down to disinfect. Because this virus is new right now, any dog exposed will be infected. Wow. This flu can be deadly at local racetracks or watching their animals closely. Doesn't say if they're putting them down yet or not, so I wouldn't imagine, huh? We'll see. And this is from today. Woman faces murder charges in husband's grisly death. A woman who was indicted on murder and other charges alleging she killed her husband, stuffed his remains to three matching suitcases. That's nice. Hope they're Samsonite, huh? And to three matching suitcases and dumped them off the Virginia coast. Melanie McGuire was indicted Tuesday by a state grand jury on charges of murder, desecration of a corpse, perjury, and weapons violation. She has already had pleaded guilty to a murder charge in June. Her husband was fatally shot between April 28th and May 5th. According to the indictment, his dismembered body floated ashore in his own matching luggage in the Chesapeake Bay near Norfolk. That's a nice scene for the tourists, huh? Hey, look, there's you know, Joe there, floating with his arms out and all that. So, this is from also from today. Apple introduces video TV playing iPod. Apple Computer unveiled Wednesday an iPod capable of playing videos, evolving the portable music player of choice into a multimedia platform for everything from TV shows to music videos. And, of course, the new show, the first show to hop online, this will be we sell episodes of Desperate Housewives and Lost for $1.99 each, making them available the day after they air on television. So Disney's all over this stuff fast, aren't they? So anyway, and it's Steve Jobs' other company is Pixar Animation Studios, his long relationship with ABC's parent Walt Disney Company. I thought that deal was defunct, so maybe not. And this is also from today. I couldn't believe I heard this. This is like an Oprah story here, but Arkansas mother gives birth to 16th child. Michelle Duggar just delivered her 16th child. She must be a cat or something. She's already thinking about doing it again. Johanna Faith Duggar was born at 6:30 in the morning, weighed 7 pounds, The father's, the baby's father, Jim Bob Duggar, a former state representative, said Wednesday that mother and child were doing fine. As the first time in 8 years, the family has had a girl. The father is 40 and the wife is 39. They want more children. We both love children, and we consider each a blessing from the Lord. I have asked Michelle if she wants more children. She said yes. If the Lord wants to give us some, she'll accept them. Man, what the hell? Of course, the Discovery Channel was there filming the birth and plans to air a show about the family next May 18th. They're building a house, a 7,000 square foot house. It should be done before Christmas. I mean, these kids, look at these kids. She had her first child at 21, 4 years after a couple married. They have all letter J: Joshua, John David, Jana, Jill, Jesse, Jinger, Joseph, Josiah, Johanna, Jeremiah, Jedediah, Jason, James, Justin, and Jackson Levy. So good for her. I hope they're not on the welfare rolls. You know, I'm gonna be paying for those hungry mouths, you know. This next one is from, I'll skip that. It's for the guests coming up. Man slips wife sleeping pills to keep fur from lover. This is from Austria, from Feldkirch, Austria. A man in Australia came up with his own solution to keep his wife and her lover apart. He has been fined for his trouble. A court has Wednesday found a 47-year-old man guilty of coercion and sentenced him to a $540 fine. He apparently is spiking his wife's food and drinks with sedatives to keep her asleep through her scheduled trysts. Austria's press agency reported the trick worked twice, but the woman pressed charges after biting down on a tablet she found on a piece of bread several months ago. Lovely. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Yeah. But you got to give the husband credit. You know, he tried to stop her from continuing her little fling there, so he drugged her food. Yeah. Why did he just divorce her? You know, she can't be that much of a catch. You know what I'm saying? It's Austria you're talking about. Police say a man walks into store. Here's another one. Very good. Nice story about wives. Husband and wives getting along so well together. Now I wonder why I'm not married. Police say a man walks into store, sets wife on fire. Woman suffers third-degree burns over 50% of her body. This is from Maryland. A man accused of walking into a mobile phone store, dousing his wife with gasoline, and then setting her on fire is now behind bars. This guy's 33. This guy walked into the T-Mobile store where his wife worked and began throwing gasoline. Why didn't she run away? Oh, she did run away. The witness say the woman ran outside, and Hargraves, her husband, followed her and set her on fire with a match. Yeah, but you can't. If you run around with a match, you want the wind set blow it out? You know, I don't know. Anyway, child pulled over. Here we go. Here's a good, what's a good story about children now. We got husband and wives, and we got children. Child pulled over for erratic driving. This is from Albany, New York. After pulling over a car that was driving erratically in Erie County Sunday night, police discovered a driver was an 11-year-old girl. Jamestown police said the 35-year-old Richard Tyler father was letting the child drive as a birthday present. Yeah, drive the car. Drive the car, little Sally. Wrapping around the post. Yeah, I don't care. Yeah, idiot. Unbelievable. I've said before, I don't think some people should be having kids. I don't know if you need some kind of class or some kind of license to be having children. I mean, it's getting to that point. What are these people? We got that story a couple weeks ago, the woman letting her kid walk alongside the car, or the kid was misbehaving, so she kicked him out of the car and took off. I mean, what is going on with these people, you know? We need to have classes in high school about, domestic relations or some kind of family relations class or something like that. So... And then we had a man overtakes train with bow and arrow. This must be Oliver Queen here. I don't know. Green Arrow. Police shot and wounded a man that took over a freight train with a bow and arrow in Montclair. Police say some guy, Camarena, boarded the Union Pacific train last night as it was stopped for a signal and threatened the only people on board, the engineer and the conductor, with a bow and arrow. He cocked the bow and arrow at the officers who opened fire. So the police stopped him, and the guy was ready to shoot his arrow at somebody, and then the police opened fire on the guy. Brilliant, isn't it? And then we had the rally shows hit hard. Hit hard times, ratings down for many programs. This is from Tuesday. Nearly every returning entry in the once white-hot genre is either flat or down among the broadcasters in prime time. Even Unscripted's most reliable warhorse, CBS Survivor, is flagging down 19% in the coveted adult. I had never yet to watch that show. 3 weeks of the year versus the same period last year, an entire run, yada, yada. Three Wishes is not doing too well. That's with, what the hell's her name, the country singer. Although no one is prepared to write the genre's obituary, the downturn reflects the advancing age of many franchises and a shortage of up-and-coming properties to replace them. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, he's sick of all these damn reality shows. The most profile of all the editions with The Apprentice, Martha Stewart, has performed well below expectations. So, I mean, even her show's dying. The Original Apprentice plummeted 41% season to date. I mean, why does Trump keep pushing that show then? It's going down the drain. So, and there's a new, this is at UPMC in Pittsburgh, medical clinic, hospital's operating room being used for removing brain tumors. A new operating room is opening Tuesday at the Pittsburgh Medical Center in Oakland, Pennsylvania, so just to remove surgical brain tumors, so good for them, good for them. What else? And this is from Saturday. A man admits sexually assaulting deaf and blind girl. Wow, this lovely guy here. Saturday in Denver, a former hospice worker plead guilty to sexually assaulting a blind, deaf, and nearly comatose 10-year-old girl with a terminal illness. Oh, man, this guy should burn for this. Investigators say 55-year-old James Philpott told them, 55 years old, he had sex with the girl because he wanted her to experience pleasure before she died. Well, how the hell? She's in a coma. How the hell is she going to know she's experiencing pleasure? I mean, idiot. Philpott faces four years, or 20 years of life from probation when he is sentenced next month. He pleaded guilty on Friday. He was a licensed practical nurse. I thought all those male nurses were gay. I guess not. Who worked at Hospice of St. John in Lakewood. The hospice said he resigned in July 2004 for reasons unrelated to the allegations. Yeah, right. Terrible. Terrible. I don't know. I'm glad I don't have kids either. I mean, how can you have kids in this day and age with all this crap going on? I don't know. I say I respect everybody's got kids. I mean, God bless you. I mean, I just can't. Big Island, there's a big area more about children being treated so well. Big Island infant run over in driveway. This is a 14-month-old infant died Thursday after a car backing out of a driveway struck the child, according to Big Island police. To treat the infant and took the child, this boy, to a hospital where he died. Where are the parents? I mean, are the parents the ones that backed them over? The story doesn't say who did it, but I mean, it's the second one. They had one earlier, I think. I read that a couple months ago, back in August, that 84-year-old woman was struck by a neighbor's car backing out of a driveway. I mean, of course, we want to, put horns and noises and whistles and stuff on the damn cars and so people can see the kids. They have damn parental responsibility, you know. You're responsible for your own kid. Why is General Motors or Ford or Isuzu or whoever the hell's making these cars, why are they responsible for your own damn kids? You're the parent. Watch for your damn kids. You know, you shouldn't be letting them in the backseat of the car, locking them in while they roast in the car. I mean, you know, idiots, you know. It's ridiculous, you know. GM, they got to put horns and whistles in the car because too many people are leaving their kids roast in their cars in the summer. I mean, unbelievable. Undocumented workers arrested at Mountain Home Air Force Base. There we go. This plays into our legal immigration business. Canyon County Commissioner Robert Vesquez says he's perplexed as to how seven undocumented workers were able to gain access to Mountain Home Air Force Base. Because they're working construction doesn't mean they can't be taking pictures or not measuring the distances. The workers who were hired to build homes for base personnel were arrested as part of an investigation by U.S. Immigration Air Force investigators. How sad is it when we let illegal aliens onto the Air Force bases of our country to do construction work when they're illegal aliens? I mean, how sad is that in this day and age in this country, you know? It's horrible. The workers were hired by New Tech Construction, a subcontractor for Parsons Evergreen. It does a lot of work, but this isn't the first time Parsons has faced allegations over illegal workers at a sensitive work site. 48 illegal aliens were arrested at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base in North Carolina. That's lovely, lovely, leaving ourselves wide open, you know. And that's Diggs. Where the hell is the crowd? Oh, I think I chased them off at the White Sox salute. I don't know. Actually, yeah, the crowd last week wasn't much to be proud of either, but they made up with the podcast, so I don't know. I have to come up with some kind of big guest. I'm working on somebody, so hopefully we can. This is from Saturday from Romania. They isolates a bird flu village. Romanian officials quarantined a Danube Delta village of 30 people Friday after three dead ducks were tested positive for bird flu, the first such cases reported in the region. Virus, blah, blah, blah. Farm-raised ducks came from migrating birds from Russia, so those birds can fly, I guess. While it is difficult for the virus to spread from birds to humans, authorities were taking no chances. No kidding. Yeah, all hell's breaking loose because Bush is trying to get some virus for the bird flu over here to the United States because they expect the bird flu to spread here to the United States. So, I don't know. The World Health Organization has said there have been at least 116 human cases of current bird flu virus, including 60 deaths. Oh, I haven't heard that anywhere before. All but a handful of cases were caused by direct contact with sick birds, including the virus, indicating the virus is unable to move easily among humans. Well, they must have came in contact with sick birds. What do they do, you know? Anyway, Yeah, that's gonna be a mess. I mean, I'm getting my flu shot I think next week, so I'm gonna get a flu shot, and I'm also gonna get a pneumonia shot too. I'm gonna get both of them, get a double whammy here. Judge freezes personal assets of trucking company owner. A judge has frozen the personal assets of a trucking company owner whose dump truck is blamed for a deadly 20-car crash in July. Police say that the company's trucks caused a deadly accident when it barreled out of control down Avon Mountains in, Avon, named after Avon Cosmetics, I don't know. On July 20, a crash killed four people, including the driver of the truck, and seriously injured four others. So, horrible. And then we have a story about a teenager sexually attacked by a magazine salesman. I mean, this goes on and on and on. A man behind bars at the sheriff's deputy say he sexually attacked a Oildale teenager in her home on Wednesday. This guy walked into her house saying he was a salesman for Free Express, and he forced himself on a teenage victim. I mean, this stuff just makes you sick and sick and sick. But anyway, I think our guest is on the line. Bring on Peter Isley. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Thank you very much for being on the program, sir.
I'm glad to be here.
Yes, I apologize. I thank you for being on as short notice. I know it was. I do appreciate it because I think, you know, it's a big issue that's going on. And then now, tell everybody out there what's SNAP all about.
Well, SNAP is the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. We've been around since 1989. We're basically an organization of survivors of sexual abuse by clergy, mostly Roman Catholic priests, but also of other clergy. And we're a support group, but we're also a group that has, brought this issue forward to public attention. We've helped reform the church to some extent so that they can deal with this issue. We're changing laws across the United States to hold sex offenders and those that are responsible for them, if they're in institutions like the church, accountable for putting children at risk and damaging so many young lives.
Well, I mean, and then today we had the big story about the L.A. The big scandal brewing up out of there, right? About the I lost my story here. About the rampant abuse by priests detailed in Los Angeles.
That's right. Right? And the Los Angeles story is virtually identical in all the dioceses across the United States, and
mm-hmm.
It's just one more example that there has been widespread sexual assault of children that has been going on, unfortunately and sadly, within the church, and that it has been facilitated by cardinals and bishops, that they have allowed this to happen, that they have moved these pedophiles around. And unfortunately, these crimes are bad enough, but they gave access to more children through the years. So it's, of course, an important story. We've heard it before, but we've got to keep hearing it until we get the job done, that this is not just a problem of sex offenders and organizations like the church. This is a problem of the sex offenders and then their supervisors who have covered up for them.
Exactly. I said it. They're enabling this to keep going on. I mean, you had the newly released records today about sex abuse claims that 126 priests
yep.
are at the core of hundreds of lawsuits against the Archdiocese of L.A., and the church has known for decades about this. I mean, it's all over the country. I mean, I'm from Chicago, and I don't want to get into my story, but I had an incident as well with a priest. You know, a bunch of us were out there. It's a Lutheran church, and a bunch of us were, playing. It's a big yard, and anyway, I threw something, ended up breaking the window, and one thing led to another with the Reverend or I forget what it was, and then just it was horrible. It scars you for life.
Yeah, this is way too common, and of course, sex offenders are going to be attracted
mm-hmm.
to jobs in which they have a lot of power over families and kids,
mm-hmm.
which they have a lot of respect that's never checked, in which they're going to be able to do this kind of criminal behavior in a way that they're going to be able to do it over and over again. And so if you can imagine, if you're a sex offender, this
mm-hmm.
is unfortunately a near-perfect situation when mm-hmm. you're a minister.
Yeah.
You have this respect of the people in the community. You have people in the Catholic Church that go to communion to you.
Mm-hmm.
They got to go to you for confession, for you to tell them their sins in order to be forgiven by God. This is an extraordinary position of power. And you know, they're allowed this incredible access to families. My family knew this priest well. My father died when I was an infant, so my mother was thrilled to have a Catholic priest when I was a kid, taking an interest in her children. You know, this was great news for her, and no one could have imagined that this priest, you know, was going to rape and sodomize children. I mean, no one could have imagined it.
Yeah.
And the problem is that his boss knew, though.
Hmm.
His boss, the bishop, knew he was doing it. And the typical story, he was moved, he was promoted, left not only positions of power, but given more power. That's what's so inexplicable about all this. Until finally victims came forward with no help from the church. Came forward to the police or to the public or to the press, and this man was finally taken care of. But that's the only thing that ever stops them, I might add.
Somebody starts talking, correct?
Well, and most victims never come forward, and they
yeah.
know this. The reporting on child sex abuse, it's the lowest reported crime in the United States. The reporting rate's under 10%. So unfortunately, it's a crime that pays. You got a 1 in 20 chance of never getting caught.
Yeah.
So they're willing to go up and roll the dice, these offenders.
I mean,
they're always banking that victims are never going to say anything. No one's going to believe them.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the kid's word against this, you know, especially when it's a minister, as you might
yeah.
imagine. You know, they never bank on that's going to happen. But
no. Well, it's the power that they have. I mean, you know, it would drive me crazy that, you know, with my incident, it's just, the Lord wouldn't be happy with what you did. You know,
of course.
It's like, oh man, and using the power of God to take advantage of somebody like that. You know, I wasn't even a Lutheran either. I was I'm a Methodist. You know, I mean, but I mean, just, you know, it's a stupid, you know, childhood mistake, and boy, you know, I mean, but I mean, it's just, you know, as I said, these are the worst kind of sex offenders.
Well, they very deliberately use the tools of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And the tools of religion to help them with their assault.
Mm-hmm.
And they use the loyalty of people, but they also use this people's, you know, fear of God or the mystery of God in order to enact these assaults. And they're very good at it. They do it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're very practiced at it. A child is completely unprepared for this, but they're completely prepared for it because that's what they do. And I can only tell you, with the offenders I've talked to, this is the most important thing in their lives. This
mm-hmm.
is the thing that they feel completely entitled to. They think they're doing, in their own twisted minds, they think that some of them think they're doing God's work, that this
mm-hmm.
is a form of love,
mm-hmm.
That this is the greatest thing that could ever happen to a child, is to have this kind of special thing happen to him by this priest. And they're completely, you know, and this is the most powerful they've ever felt. I've heard them talk about sexual assault, and, you know, they're enjoying even talking
mm-hmm.
about it because
mm-hmm.
the memory of it is so powerful for them and so enjoyable to them.
Yeah. Well, and they had the case, I've been following it in Philadelphia, I can't remember the priest's name or whatever, but, I mean, you know, he slipped the victim like ether to
right.
make him delirious, and then the kid woke up to find the priest grinding against him. I'm like, oh man, you not know, you know, waking up in a stupor and all of a sudden, you know, the priest is, you know, grinding against you. That's horrible.
Well,
you know?
I can't tell you how many stories of victims that were you know, that stayed over at the rectory. Now, you're not going to be seeing hopefully much of that anymore, but that was very common at one time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd have kids stay over at the rectory, especially boys. They'd wake up and this priest was on top of them assaulting them.
I mean, where were we at? And from LA, the AP said that they're about the LA story, about more than 75 years of this, and
yeah.
The archdiocese kept moving these guys around from church to church to church. I mean, I don't understand why the Justice Department has gotten in here and shut some of these archdioceses down.
Well, that's a terrific question, and we in fact wrote a very detailed proposal to the Justice Department over a year ago,
mm-hmm.
asking for an investigation, because it's now been demonstrated in over a dozen grand jury reports that the church has moved known felony sex offenders across state and international boundaries. Why has there been no report by the Justice Department? We have heard nothing from them. We met with Senator Santorum because he's made some comments about this issue with Senator Kennedy a few months ago, and asked him to what's going on with the Justice Department. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't know. We got to look into this. We haven't heard from him. The Justice Department is, I'm afraid, extremely reluctant to begin asking questions because they probably don't know where this is going to go. Mm. Once you start looking into this, investigating this, it's going to go places that then you're going to have to do something about it. And this is also, if it's the Catholic Church, we're also talking about, now I'm Catholic and a practicing Catholic, but we're also talking about the person who runs this institution, the person that has the only power to hire and fire a priest, is the Pope in Rome. And that's a sovereign state. Yeah. That is a nation state. We have an ambassador to the Vatican. Mm-hmm. People don't realize this. They say there's church-state separation, but this is a political issue because we have a political entity, and you can't get files. For instance, a lot of the files about these priests are over in Rome.
Yeah, and they're sealed.
You get them because of state immunity.
Absolutely.
So that's where it's going to take you.
Yeah, and
it's going to take the Justice Department, and I'm afraid that they're putting the interest of the political concern over investigating the church, because that may upset some people over the safety of children in the United States.
Yeah, well, then they had the case out of Texas where they tried to get Ratzinger to get testimony out of him, because he's the one that sent the edict down to all the archdiocese and written in Latin, but
right.
Also saying to keep it quiet for 10 years after the 10 years after they turn 18, is that correct?
Something like that.
Crimes
are crimes even in Latin, even though they might sound better in Latin.
Well,
they're crimes, and the church has what's called canon law, and if people are out there are Catholic, they know practically nothing about this, but it's got its own judicial system, because it's been around for a long time. But the point is, we're talking about a civil law in the United States and criminal law in a democratic country, and their canon law really isn't a law.
No.
It's like their personnel policy, and no profession working with children in our society that I know of, therapists, doctors, and so forth, has anything remotely like the loopholes in their law. Look, if you're a teacher and you've abused a child in my state, you're gone.
No. Yeah.
You're not going to ever teach again. Your certification is taken from you. Mm-hmm. If you're a county employee or city or state employee, your pension's gone. But that's not how it is with the clergy.
No.
They can remain priests. They're taking them out of ministry now because they've been forced to do that, but they're not taking them out of the priesthood. And I might add, they're limiting this just to the United States. This is a global problem. This is a problem across the globe, obviously, the abuse of children. And in places like Latin America and elsewhere, it's even worse.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, because, it's bad up here in the United States, because, we have the media, I don't know, some of the media putting light on it, but you can imagine, like, Latin America or Africa, all these,
It's terrible.
The poverty-stricken areas of the, in that area, anywhere, India, I mean, it's just got to be horrible.
You have very few human rights. Laws, and like you said, there's very few media putting the light in this. So the Catholic Church is actually in a position, a very unique position, because it's a global organization to root out of its own organization. I mean, there are 450,000 clerics in the Catholic Church, so that's conservatively some 25,000 sex offenders, and they have an opportunity. This Pope has an opportunity, of course, as they all have, to say there's going to be no sexual abuse in the Catholic Church around the globe. It doesn't matter where we are. It doesn't matter if we're in, the most, the country, most repressive country, or the freest democratic country. In our churches, in our parishes, there will be no sexual abuse of children.
Yeah.
And that's what we're hoping this Pope will do, but that's not what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I say, I don't hold your breath on this one to do anything. I mean,
he knows more about pedophile priests
than
anybody on earth because of the job he had before he became Pope. He has been involved in these cases for over 25 years directly and intimately. He has seen cases, I'm sure, which would make what we're reading about in Los Angeles and Philadelphia look like child's play. I'm sure there's been some terrible cases, probably including homicide and serial homicide, which is going to happen.
Yeah.
Some of these sex offenders turn into child killers. That's how it works. That's how it goes. So, I mean, there's some really, really awful things. And if you don't stop it at the top, of course, if you let it happen under your watch, and then you let it happen again and again and again, it's simply been, unfortunately, it's been like the Fertile Crescent for sex offenders, the church, and you know, that's a terrible statement to have to make, but the facts now show that's what it's been.
Well, and for those of you just joining us, I'm Sean, and I'm joined by Peter Isley. Am I getting that right?
Yes.
Okay. From the SnapNetwork.org, it's survivor networks of those abused by priests, and we're talking about the big news, L.A. All this, you know, 75 years of abuse by these priests and other clergy. And, you know, mostly it's all boys, right? There are some cases where it's women and girls, but mainly it's all boys, teenage boys and younger.
Well, it appears from the statistics that have been gathered, and it's a tough area to get numbers in, but it appears that around two-thirds or so have been male, and about a third have been female. And our organization is about 50-50, male and female. So it has been. And there's speculation as to why that's the case. Part of it simply has to do with access and availability, probably. It's a lot easier for priests to abuse males. Some of them abuse both males and females. So it's hard to really know you know, what these individuals are up to, other than the fact that they want to have sexual contact with children.
Well, I mean, actually, a question from the chat room is, why did the Catholic Church keep moving these offending priests around rather than toss them out? I think they were afraid to face the scandal, huh?
Well, you know, they have their own explanations, even within their own documents. Mm-hmm. They have a special idea. In fact, there's an idea in church law and in church theology about not giving scandal. And part of the explanation that you'll read in their own documents is that they had to cover this up. They wouldn't call it that, but they had to keep this quiet because it would challenge people's faith in the church and in the priesthood. If they found out that their priest was a sex offender, that would make them doubt their faith. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a pretty lame excuse. I happen to think it is, but it's a very common explanation that you hear.
Yeah.
I think part of it is that once you start covering up for one guy, and you do it once, then when he does it again, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Because now, are you going to report him now after you didn't report him last time?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? Go to the police and then say, oh, and by the way, I didn't report him last year when he did the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of it's kind of human nature when you think about it.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about one time, right? We're talking about hundreds of these guys. I mean, their numbers in the United States that they've acknowledged is something like 6,000.
Oh, and at least that many, right?
Oh,
it's
probably more. But what's interesting is that nobody had to have some sort of big meeting, apparently, to decide how to cover this up in 190 dioceses. Mm. It apparently was so embedded in the culture of the organization, you know, this secrecy and this idea about the priest. But part of it is that, and this is just my own personal opinion, not necessarily for other victims, but there's a gender apartheid in the Catholic priesthood, whether you like that or not.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have women priests.
Mm-hmm.
And to become a minister is a moral and ethical decision, and yet there's this biological exclusion.
Hmm.
And that's just perverse. I mean, I don't know how you can explain that. So right now, you can't be a woman and a priest.
No.
You can't be a married man and a priest, but you can be a sex offender and a priest. You can be a child molester and a priest. If you could explain that to me, makes sense.
Yeah.
And believe me, it makes sense. They can sort of give this explanation, and I just glaze over. I don't get it. How does those rules make any kind of sense? So it is a kind of it has something to do with, I think in their minds, defending the priesthood, defending, and they tell me over and over, these bishops and cardinals, when you talk to them, when I've talked to them, that when you become a priest, it changes your being. It changes what you are inside. And I don't know. Look, you got a guy that's abused a couple hundred kids. You ordained the wrong guy.
Mm.
Okay.
Well,
I never should have been a priest.
Exactly. And as soon as the first case came up, they should have banished him from the priesthood as well. And another question is from the chat room is Cardinal Law the poster child for the scandal?
Law from Boston was
yes.
was one thing. The Cardinal Law, Boston is symbolically the center kind of Catholic America. But he has certainly not been the worst cardinal or bishop for covering up sex offenders. He ended up being sort of taken the sword for it, dropping on the sword for it, because the scandal erupted there again. I mean, I've been at this like 15 years, and this was news, frontline. headline news and front page news in the 90s, up to about the mid-90s, went away and came back.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that, that Cardinal Law did not disclose everything, and it just got worse and worse for him. And but he was rewarded. I mean, he where is he right now?
He's in the Vatican.
He's still a cardinal. He's got a he lives in a beautiful. He's been given a cathedral to run.
Wow, lovely.
He lives in a beautiful home setting, apartment or whatever. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Hmm.
And he was allowed to speak for the Pope when do the special mass when the Pope died, in very special honor. So he's not in any way censored or has faced any real disciplinary action. He voluntarily resigned.
Yeah.
But like I said, percentage-wise, he's not the worst. Boston has not been the worst diocese in the United States.
Well, especially now, looking at this L.A. business, you have to say that there's a good case for them, or Denver. Denver's got several cases brewing, too.
Well, Philadelphia was pretty bad. My diocese in Milwaukee is one of the worst. It's in the top 10. Chicago's not been too great.
Yes, absolutely.
But around the country, these larger dioceses. So when you look at percentage of known sex offenders in the diocese, it's first of all, it's system wide.
Mm-hmm.
This behavior of not just abusing children but of transferring them is across the United States. This is not you can say, well, not all priests are sex offenders. Of course not. Although you can argue there appears to be a larger percentage within the clergy. But still, you can say fine. But most bishops and cardinals covered this up.
Yeah.
And that certainly tells you something about the leadership group.
Yeah,
and none of them have any consequences for it.
No.
None of them have had to step down. None of them have resigned. None of them have been disciplined.
Mm.
They all keep their titles. They all keep their jobs. And we're just supposed to, I guess, go on
like nothing happened.
Well, like, and what does that say about the crimes that were committed?
I don't know. It bothers me. Is it like the money? We're giving them money. The money's nothing. The money will help for get some therapy and stuff. The money's not going to make up for the hellish childhood some people had to go through over having experienced something like that.
I have seen dioceses. They have endless legal. Money for legal and other and PR firms and everything else. Nobody quite knows how they manage their money. Again, because they're a religion, no one can do anything about it. In Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, you cannot file a civil case against the church. We're the only state in the United States that you cannot do it because of laws that were passed in the mid-90s in our state that the Supreme Court ruled on about clergy abuse cases because they said it would interfere with the practice of religion. So when all cases had to be dropped here, the Archdiocese of Milwaukee went after victims for cost. Their lawyer went after
you're
victims
kidding.
For cost. I'm not kidding.
Oh, my
including
God.
Where the offender admitted that he had assaulted that person.
Unbelievable.
As a kid. Admitted it. Yeah, they still went after them for cost, put liens on their house if they were lucky enough to have one, against their credit report, this kind of thing. And I'm not kidding you. That's the kind of ruthless kind of backdoor alleyway behavior that I've seen with these dioceses. And they can come out and wear robes and hats and all that kind of stuff and speak really kind and nice words. But when it comes to this issue, I'm telling you, I've seen behavior out of it. But look, if you're willing to cover up for abuse of a child, what are you willing to do? I mean, it's really... and if you're going to protect, quote, the church and protect God, apparently, it's okay to do all kinds of things.
Well,
I've seen legal tactics which are just terrible.
I'm sure. I said a couple weeks ago on this program that what if the situation was reversed? What if there's these teen guys raping these priests? All hell would be breaking loose. You know what I'm saying?
Geez.
I mean, it'd be all over the place, and then you'd be burning these kids at the stake, and then I understand the double standard here. I don't know why the Justice Department...
You would have vigilante groups going out and getting... like I said, many years of doing this, I don't know of a single instance, not one, where a priest has been removed from his parish for abusing children, and which has been substantiated, it's been proven, where the parish rallied around the victim. I have not seen it once. It's always rallying around
the church,
the offender,
or the church itself too.
Well, that's how they see it. You know what I mean? That somehow attacking what they see is that if you question this, you're attacking the church. Mm. And what they don't see or want to see is that you're attacking abuse in the church, and that the person organizations that have done more damage, that have really attacked the core of the church, have been these offenders, but even more importantly, the bishops and cardinals who have let it happen. That they have morally weakened the church well beyond anything, in at least my opinion, that anybody else could have done in the last quarter of a century the church in the United States.
Well, then, you know, I keep emailing Bill O'Reilly because he's pounding the drums about that Jessica Lunsford bill down there in Florida. And I said, well, that's good, but are we including the priests in this sexual offenders list of the Jessica's Law or not?
Because right. I mean, one thing, and I, you know, you mentioned him, and that's somebody that I've also been needing to contact soon because about our Justice Department request. Because look, where is Senator Santorum and these conservatives on this issue with the Justice Department? Where has President Bush been and the Justice Department on this issue of clergy abuse? I would defy you to see any issue that has had screaming headlines for this long, for this many years, any criminal story in which there has been no federal investigation into it.
Yeah, they can investigate Karl Rove, and they can investigate Clinton over the blue dress, but they can't investigate these damn priests.
Over something a little bit more important.
But exactly.
The list of names is critical because bishops and cardinals, you know, they talk about how sorry they are now and all this kind of stuff, made mistakes. Fine. Right now, the one thing they could do that could protect children and give parents something that would be useful are the names and locations of all these clergy people that have abused children.
Uh-huh.
Where are they?
Uh-huh.
Who are they? What are you doing with them? Mm-hmm. Where have you settled them? And they're not telling us. And I don't think you need to know anything else but that.
Yeah.
Anybody that says, we've learned, we've changed. Mm-hmm. And now, why do they have that information? Because they have kept that information secret. That didn't go to the police. And if it did go to the police didn't do anything about it, which unfortunately was too often the case.
Yeah.
Where the DA or the police would find out about it, and they would go to the church instead of prosecuting, and then the church would, quote, take care of it. That's another part of the story which is beginning to emerge around the country as we dig deeper into this. But, I mean, the fact is they've got that list of names, and you're right. What good is a list if you're not going to have these 6,000, 7,000 church, pre sex offenders on it?
I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, if it is, you'll have to have the list be the size of a phone book, probably, with all those priests in there. But still, I mean, you know, people should know if you get one of these, you know, I would call them a perverts in your church, you know, because you send your kid over to Sunday school, and how are you going to know if this priest isn't letting them have it after church on Sunday?
Well, they show up in churches, and sex offenders will tell you that they like churches.
Oh, I'm sure
in general, anyway, because the churches are good places for them to troll, good places for them to find naive and willing families who are going to let them work their way into their family.
Mm-hmm.
Churches like to forgive. They like to sort of like think that this can be, you know, gotten through with and done with, and everything's going to be fine. So they like churches, and there's been many, many instances of these priests, or even if they become ex-priests, showing up again at other churches, other congregations, becoming youth ministers. And a lot of these guys, now you got to realize, these are high-functioning individuals. These are people all with graduate degrees.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who have spent most of their lives being trained in persuading people and getting up in front of hundreds and hundreds of people every week and delivering homilies and sermons, who are with people all the time. So these are highly skilled, intelligent individuals. Right, and they have they're very persuasive. These are good con men, and you and we got to know, minimally, we should know who they are, so that if they start showing up, in our churches or our neighborhoods, we know who to look out for.
Well, and then I have a question from the chamber about in Philly, the church, the archdiocese seemed to blame it all on an anti-Catholic bias in the media. What do you think of that? That's a load of BS, huh?
It's pretty pathetic.
Yeah.
There are things in that. That was a terrific report out of that district attorney's office.
Oh, they tore him to shreds.
And the question that everyone asked is, why is nobody in jail for this?
Absolutely.
And why isn't the cardinal in jail for this?
That's right.
And the guy who covered this all up for many years, the Cardinal Bevilacqua, who's just recently retired, he is both a civil lawyer and a canon lawyer.
Mm.
So he knew exactly what he was doing. And what did they get for this? The Diocese of Philadelphia, the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, has paid out, this is the total that they've had to pay out to victims, $200,000. That's it.
Unbelievable.
$200,000, thousands of victims. That's it. And so there's your success, and that's what you get. That's what you get. You know, I guess they're getting their money's worth. But there are stories, and you know, there are accounts in that DEA report which are terrible. There's a priest who impregnated a 12-year-old and then took the child for an abortion.
Ah, you're kidding me.
I mean, just and the church knew about all this.
Ah. And they turn the other cheek and let them get away with it. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, I don't know what else. What can people out there do? I get a lot of listeners, a lot of podcasts. I mean, what can they do? Can they get on the media to shed some light on these rats?
Well, the most important thing is to change the laws in our state, and that's in our states, and that's what we're doing right now. I mean, SNAP, and you can get on our website. You can see the kind of legislative action we've been taking. And fortunately, we're having some success. Part of it's a statute of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
These ridiculous, outdated, archaic statute of limitations on child abuse, which the churches use in order to wait out the statute so that the individual wouldn't have to be prosecuted. They should be eliminated, mm-hmm. We believe, across the United States. There should be no statute of limitations on child abuse. There is no statute of limitations on homicide, if someone has abused a child, he should never think for one moment that the law is not potentially there to catch him. And the other things is make clergy mandatory reporters of abuse, like other professionals that are working with children, that they have to report the abuse of a child. If they know that a child's being abused, that their obligation is to report that abuse. That whatever other reasons or explanations they have, it gets trumped by the safety, the immediate safety need of that child. And then finally, in states where the church has been protected from civil litigation, that we open up a window or make civil statutes that allow victims of institutions like the church to be able to bring their cases to court, because that way, they're not going to give us names, but victims can name them in court. They can get documents. They can get depositions. What's happening in Los Angeles is because victims have been able, some of them have been able to get into court and demand these documents and demand the truth. And
absolutely.
If it wasn't for that, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Absolutely. Right. Well, Peter, I thank you very much for being on the program. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. And thank you. That was Peter Isley from SNAP. And in the second hour, we'll have Justin Gardner with his political report, and then we'll have Nick over in from Blogebrity. Okay, I'll have to get how to pronounce it. So Blogebrity, celebrity Blogebrity, I guess it is. And we'll be back in just a few minutes. Thank you very much.
Baby, chemical between us, the wall. LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
Subject to discussion in the second hour of the program, and I appreciate everybody sticking with me. The live audience managed to hang in there, so I appreciate that. And all you got to do now is go on to the podcast version and tell your friends, tell your enemies, just tell someone about that. And it was a good interview. It was a little heavy, I know. I should have flashed my parental discretion is advised type of thing, but it's an issue I think deserves to be brought out. I mean, this is ridiculous in this day and age. We can't get a handle on this Catholic Church. So, and then actually joining us is right now is Justin Gardner from the Dunkelfant. This is Public Report. Justin, are you there, sir?
Sean, hey.
Hey, how are you? Now, we're talking off air, and then what do you think of this sex abuse BS by these priests?
Well, I mean, obviously it's horrible, right? I mean, like any abuse of children is ridiculous. But then you have, on top of that, you have the priests essentially admitting, yeah, you know, we did do this, and then their diocese going after the victims for court costs.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's crazy. That is insanity.
Yeah.
That is so, like, I mean, in my mind, that is so against, like, what, you know, the church should stand for. It's about helping people, mm-hmm. and they're trying to go after people putting liens on their houses. I mean, like, that's criminal in and of itself, it seems like.
Yeah, it's just, well, if anybody's out there listening, there's a lot of people listening, and only a couple people in the chat room, you can go on lvrocks.com, click on Cam and Chat. You can join us in there and give us your 2 cents. And once again, I'm joined by Justin from the Dunkelvent blog, which is an excellent centrist blog. And, this abuse thing. You know what? Nobody wants to touch it because I think the political scandal, the political backlash, you don't want the Catholics going up in arms against them because they'll be finished, you know?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But, see, the thing about it is like, I mean, he was talking about ways to get the message out and ways to change this. And you know, as you had mentioned, you and I were talking offline just there a couple minutes ago, and I think the way to do it, the way to get this information out is to start a network of blogs across the country that, mm-hmm. that keep track of this type of stuff. And really dig deep into this information and get this information out there so that when the church is shuffling these guys from you know, diocese to diocese and all around the country, that people know where they're going. Because, I mean, this is crazy. The church has been complicit in mm-hmm. covering the tracks of these, essentially these child molesters for decades.
Yeah.
I mean, decades upon decades. Yeah. And, you know, the blogosphere can help that, can help cure that. Another way to do it is also to, just like with any other thing that you don't agree with, is to just vote with your pocketbook. You know, I mean, if you're out there, if you're Catholic, if you want to make a statement, don't give them any money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because they're using that money to shuffle people around the country
yeah.
that have abused children.
Yeah, you know, and it keeps going on. I mean, a couple years ago, they said, oh, we've taken care of it. I mean, you know, this one in L.A., it's 75 years of abuse, and it's still going on. And then the Denver just had a big scandal blow up over it, and I think Philadelphia. I mean, it's still going on. I mean, don't kid yourselves. This stuff is still going on. And it's like you said, what's his name, Peter, you know, if it's this bad in the United States, can you imagine how it is in some of these other countries? You know, like South America or Latin America. America, it's got to be horrendous down there.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, I don't want to try to compare the United States to any other country. I mean, because uh-huh. you know, really, what I want to focus on is like my country, right? But
yeah.
you know, what I think is really interesting, what the Catholic Church, I mean, they're trying to address with the new Pope is essentially talking about homosexuals, not bringing homosexuals into, you know, making sure that homosexuals don't get into the church.
Mm.
And you heard, you know, from the guy from Snap, I forget his name, but
Peter,
you know. This goes both ways. It's not about homosexuality, and tying mm-hmm. homosexuality directly to, like, pedophilia,
mm-hmm.
I think is really irresponsible for the church to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was that story of that guy impregnating that 12-year-old girl and you know, taking her, or the priest, taking this 12-year-old girl that he had impregnated to go have an abortion.
Yeah, and there's right? supposed to be,
I mean,
against
so
abortions.
This isn't a gay or straight issue.
No.
This is a pedophilia issue.
Yeah, they don't just
you
don't.
Know? And I think that a lot of people don't separate the two,
no.
and that's really unfortunate. And
no.
and by the way, it doesn't seem like the Vatican is separating the two, and
no.
that's even worse.
Yeah, it's just well. Anyway, I want to get to some of the items you want to talk about. You had the triple play here with Harriet Myers, James Dobson of all people, and Laura Bush. There, that's, you know, what's going on with them?
Yeah, well, so more about Harriet Myers. More about Harriet Myers is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
James Dobson essentially, I guess, knew a couple days beforehand, and he said on his program, he's like, this is the stuff that I shouldn't know, but, you know, be okay with Harriet Myers. And this kind of raised the eyebrows of Arlen Specter, and he was like, well, James Dobson knows something about Harriet Myers that we don't, because there is, well, you know, I mean, this is what I'm saying, there is very little about Harriet Myers out there. then we should get James Dobson in front of the you know, Judiciary Committee to report what Carl Rove told him.
Yeah.
And you know, the third part of that triple play between Harriet Myers and James Dobson is Laura Bush, when Matt Lauer kind of asked her if this was if the opposition to Harriet Myers might be due to some sexism. She said that she, you know, essentially agreed that it could, which I think is just kind of weird, because I mean, you have all these other justices, Janice Rogers Brown,
Priscilla Owen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Priscilla Owen. You know, all these other justices. I mean, these appeals court judges, who, you know, have a very, you know, very good records, you know, as far as judges go. You know, I don't know that I necessarily agree with their stances on certain issues, but I mean, you know, this isn't about sexism. I mean, there were certainly women who were seemingly much more qualified to get this nomination, and I think that's really what's pissing off conservatives, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you got to trust her heart, Bush said, and you got to trust me, and you know, trust Karl Rove, and you know, and Karl Rove is all caught up in this scandal again with more with this plane business, huh?
Yeah, the Karl Rove thing. It seems like he is there's a possibility that him and Libby will get indicted.
Ooh.
And it's becoming more and more likely that Rove's going to get indicted because of basically he's probably going to get indicted for perjury.
Wow.
And the reason being is that he went before the grand jury like three or four times and testified, but he didn't disclose this email that he sent to a colleague of his about a conversation they had with Matt Cooper. Who was the Time reporter. And the explanation that the reason that they didn't find this email is because they didn't have the right keyword search, right? They didn't enter the right search terms. Now, I mean, honestly, Sean, you know, anybody who uses any type of modern email client knows that you could search through all the emails that you sent in a week, probably in the span of, you know, 4 or 5 hours. You know, I mean, like, if you really wanted to go, you know, down every single email, and I imagine Karl Rove sends a lot of emails, right?
Yeah.
But you would also probably know the day that you talked to that person or, you know, the couple days, so you could search by the day, right? And it just, I don't know, that story certainly doesn't pass the smell test.
Yeah.
Libby is, might possibly get,
that's
perjury.
Cheney's chief of staff, right?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
He's got a weird name. What's his name?
Scooter.
Scooter Libby, yeah.
Scooter
sounds like who the hell was that with the OJ business? Oh, you know, you got that, you know, when Cochran.
Oh, you mean Cato Kalin?
No, not Cato, but they're looking for these other. Oh no, the Lacey Peterson thing. We're looking for what's his name? Garrigo is looking for some weird, strange name driving the brown van. Remember all that?
Oh no, man, I didn't call the Lacey Peterson thing at all. I was like, okay, some guy killed his pregnant wife. I'm checked out. Yeah. I don't want to know.
Oh, Skeeter.
I mean, that's
it was Skeeter was in the Lacey Peterson, but now we got Scooter, and then what? Cooter? Is Cooter involved in this too?
No, Scooter, or no, that was Cooter. Cooter from the Dukes of Hazzard. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's starting to look like the Dukes of Hazzard there, and then the White House. I mean, what? The and
well,
Carl Rove's like Boss Hogg, you know.
with all these indictments coming down, you know, I talked to you also about there's this Howard Fineman of Newsweek's. He's kind of sounding the alarm bell that there might be a little bit of jockeying for a position between Andy Card and Karl Rove. A lot of people think that Andy Card was responsible for the Harriet Myers nomination because Karl Rove was down for the count with
the plane business.
What's that?
With the plane business, or
well, the plane business was a little bit of it, but also he had a a really, really bad case of kidney stones.
Oh.
And I don't know if any of your listeners have ever had kidney stones. Mm. Thank God I haven't. Mm. But I know people who have, and it's like, it's the most painful thing a man can ever go through. You know, I mean, it's just kidney stones. Think about that, and think about where they have to come out from. So, he was dealing with that, and you're not going to be thinking about who you want to nominate to the Supreme Court. You know, when you're dealing with that. Not only that, then Katrina happened, and Bush put him in charge of Katrina, the relief effort, and so he's been extremely busy. Then he has to deal with this claim indictment, and he has to deal with the claim, you know, whole claim investigation.
Yeah.
And now Howard Fineman is saying that Andy Card might be coming out as far as a coming out and kind of
taking over,
doing a little political jockeying and coming out actually against kind of the preemptive war strategy.
Really?
Which personally I don't buy at all. Mm. But that's what he said on Chris Matthews like last night, or it might have been last night or the night before. So. Yeah, so like that, you know, it's just to hear these types of things, to hear these rumors floating around. I mean, Fineman was pretty dead on with a lot of the Clinton stuff.
Oh yes, oh yeah. So, the blue dress. He was dead on about all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he usually doesn't talk about stuff until it really gels up.
Yeah.
Well, you know, at least with big scandals like this.
Yeah.
So. Hey, listen, you never know. I mean, you really never know. But I just find it really hard to believe that Andy Card would abandon that whole preemptive war strategy.
Yeah, I mean, Bush has got to be pulling his hair out. I mean, you know, first of all, he was, you know, bashing Clinton for, you know, coming in and saying he's going to have the most ethical presidency ever, and now, you know, and now I'm going to follow through with that. Now all this is brewing around. I mean, it's just, it's horrible. You know, that man's got to be so ready to get out of that White House. You know what I mean? Don't you think he'll be glad?
What's that?
Don't you think he'll be glad when all this is over with? Because he had to deal with 9/11, he had to deal with all this, you know, the all this with Roe now, and he had to deal with Rita and Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita Moreno and all this stuff. You know what I mean? He's got to be just, get me out of here. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I don't think any president ever is like, okay, well, get me out of here. But I do think that.
Burned out, huh?
Oh, my God. I mean, can you imagine being him, right?
No,
I mean, like, you have to deal with basically half the nation thinking that you actually did not get elected, okay, that you got installed by the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Then, essentially, about 9 months later...
the worst terrorist attack ever
on
American soil.
Yeah, worst terrorist attack on our soil, right, since Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, you know, massive approval rating, and then you have half the country turn against you again... because you essentially build a new type of strategy, you know, for this war on terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
You call out three nations and there's questionable evidence, and then there's a lot of people saying, well, you know, this guy is an evil bastard and he tortures his people and he carries out acts of genocide. We don't even care if there's WMDs in there, you know.
Yeah.
There was a part of the whole preemptive war group, including, you know, quite a few bloggers on Donklefont, who, you know, they didn't care, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you've essentially divided the country again, and because the policy divides the country. I don't necessarily think the people divide the country.
No,
the policy divides the country.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of people missed that point. And so then the Iraq War kind of, you know, comes and go. You do the mission accomplished thing, and then, you know, the violence goes up, the violence continues, you get lambasted with that, then you have to go right into another election, go up against you know, John Kerry, who just, you know, creamed you in the first debate, and I think Bush creamed himself, honestly. I mean, Kerry wasn't necessarily really all that impressive to anybody.
No.
He just, I mean, Bush just
wasn't,
you know,
on his game. Yeah. Even with the little microphone gadget in his back, huh?
I don't know.
I'm kidding.
Conspiracy stuff with that,
no.
You know. That was just weird.
Yeah.
So,
and then you got stuck with what else? Then the corporate scandals, and then
the corporate scandals with one of his friends.
Exactly.
I mean, Kinlay was, you know.
Where's his trial at? How come we haven't heard from him? Where's his trial?
I don't think his trials come up yet. That's soon, though.
What's taking so long?
I think Fastow's trial, and I mean, trust me, you'll hear about it.
I hope so.
I think the Tyco guys just got
they just got nailed.
And Bernie Ebers, you know, so these things take a little bit more time.
Well, this seems strange because Martha Stewart, they managed to lock her up and throw away and let her out while Leahy's still waiting to go on trial.
Oh, you know? Yeah, but well, you know, and I think probably Lay has better lawyers. they're holding this out. And another thing too is the prosecution wants to make sure that their cases, you know, like just shut and case or shut and close.
And then
shut. There you go. That's the right word.
Then he had the DUI laws in D.C. and other states like Missouri.
Yeah, you know, this is a really weird thing that I don't think a lot of people realize. And actually, a friend of a friend just got charged with a DUI. DUI is essentially driving under the influence of alcohol or any other types of substances. Mm-hmm. DWI is driving while intoxicated. The DWI comes usually when it's I think that I'm getting this right, when you blow in a breathalyzer 0.08 or above.
Ah.
Okay, but DUI is zero tolerance. It is anything in your system, you know. And that also includes medication where it says do not drive heavy machinery or something, stuff like that. Yeah, if you are found like under the influence of that stuff, you can actually get a DUI, which carries the exact same penalties that a DWI does. So we're talking about zero tolerance. So my question is, how can like sports stadiums, how can bars, how can restaurants, how can any of these places serve alcohol legally? You know, I mean, like any place that people have to go and drive to.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, especially sports stadiums, like everybody, I mean, you can literally drink one beer, blow a .03, right?
Well, how about the casinos here in Vegas?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
wow.
There are like, I mean, I would say like probably half of the drivers on the road could potentially get DUI.
Well, even if you have cough medicine in your body, you can get pulled over. You know,
if you have
chloroseptic.
I mean, if you do a little shot of Benaca in there, make sure that you don't have bad breath. I mean, you have like some mouthwash that has alcohol in it.
Incredible.
I mean, it's a little bit weird. And not only that, why do we have the distinction between DUI and DWI, right? I mean, because
it's for the lawyers, isn't it?
I guess it is. But still, there's this distinction that, like, okay, over .08, you are, I believe it's, here's what I think it is. From, like, .01 to .05, it's basically, if you fall under that, you're, people think, okay, well, you're not necessarily intoxicated.
People usually get off, right? Uh-huh.
Between .05 and .08, it's up to the discretion of the court whether or not you're intoxicated. And over .08, it's basically you're intoxicated. Well, you know, the intoxication level has been going down over the years. I mean, it used to be like it was .12, you know, or I think it was .14, then it was .12, then it's .10, then it's .08. And I think eventually what we're going to get to is we're going to get to zero tolerance. And personally, I can have a beer, I can have a beer, hang out at a restaurant for 2 hours, and I'll be okay to drive.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that these laws are kind of overdoing it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, like, what somebody has told me is if you get pulled over and you've been drinking, do not tell the cops that you've been drinking.
Just don't say,
I have not been drinking. Because if you tell the cops that you've been drinking, they have got to do a breathalyzer test on you.
Absolutely.
Now, they have got to do it.
We have one more issue before we let you go about the flat tax.
Yeah, the flat tax are pretty interesting. I was just, there's been a couple, Andrew Sullivan has brought that up a couple times, and there was a Forbes article, and you can read it on Don LaFont. Go to the search bar in the second column and type in flat tax, and it's the very first story. In fact, that's what I'm going to do right now. There was a Forbes article that essentially kind of revisited Steve Forbes' flat tax proposal. And it's pretty interesting. One of the things that it does is it kind of one of the big problems with the flat tax, and one of the reasons why especially liberal constituencies decry it, is because it essentially levels the playing field, but what happens is that, you know, the poor then have to pay more, and the rich have to pay less. Everything is just flat across the board.
Yeah.
And what this one does is it proposes that it gets rid of the kind of the across-the-board $9,000 per person exemption because, you know, Bill Gates doesn't need a $9,000 exemption.
True.
You know, but your average Joe, you know, who's making $20,000 a year does, right? So, you know, I mean, for, it's, you know, it's basically targeted, you know, it's like the bottom third of earners. And also another thing is the Social Security payroll tax, which essentially has a cap on it. And I don't know if you know this, Sean, but it has a cap on it where over $90,000 you don't have to pay taxes on whatever you, you make over $90,000.
Yeah, I thought that's ridiculous. They should get rid of that. Let everybody pay their Social Security tax.
Well, right, and I mean, and people do, but after they earn more than $90,000, whatever they earn above that does not get taxed Social Security. Well, if you were to take that take that cap off of that, not only would that like you know, well, essentially Social Security would be solvent then.
Yeah, well, that's what I said.
I mean, that's essentially what the deal is.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know why they don't get on that. I mean, you know, with the $90,000, over $90,000, right? It makes perfect sense. That's what I'm saying. Washington doesn't want common sense answers to these big problems. They want big, complex answers to these big, complex problems. I don't understand that, you know?
Well, I mean, it's some of these things are common sense, and I'm not saying necessarily that the flat tax is common sense, but I think that there are ways to have a flat tax, the idea of a flat tax, and then build things on top of that to kind of incentivize putting money into a 401k, buying health insurance, right, and then getting rebates back from that in the form of tax breaks, especially for somebody who's you know, like a family of four that's making $25,000 a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
In order to get these rebates, you know, then you need to make you need to provide proof that you have insurance, right? Or you know, or you're putting money away in 401k, and then that way you're paying you know you're paying very little. I mean, I think that the flat tax rate is that they're offering in the new Forbes article is 14%. You know, 14% is pretty good.
Yeah, well, I remember when he was running for president, the man made perfect sense, but they all looked at him like he was an idiot. You know, he never got anywhere. He's goofy. He looks goofy in those glasses. The man made more sense than anybody else that was running besides Perot. You know.
Well, I mean, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. I think that he was, I thought he was kind of a one-trick pony. Mm-hmm. And this, it's not, Forbes is not proposing this new one.
Yeah.
This is kind of a tweaking of his proposal. He was proposing 17%, I don't think there was very much to it besides that. Mm-hmm. This one is 14% plus all of these extra little programs here and there. So I would say that, you know, hey, go to the website, and take a look at the this article. It's called Another Flat Tax Proposal, and you know, give us your comments. Let's
absolutely
talk about it.
Absolutely. Well, Justin, we thank you for being on the program again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
thank you.
Great to be
we
here.
Look forward to you to be on next week, or you got plans?
Are you going to put me on the spot?
I like locking people in early. Yeah. I had this guy booked last week, Gilchrist, and he no-showed me, so I'm...
Because he was in a commercial?
Something. I don't know.
Minutemen are in a commercial now? Like they're making money off of protecting the border?
I think they're in the Minute Maid orange juice commercials now.
Or Minute Rice.
Minute Rice, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's in Minute Rice. Anyway, all right. I'll talk to you during the week then. All right?
Okay, man.
All right. Thank you very much.
Have a good one.
You
bye
too. Thank you. And that was Justin Gardner from the Dunkelfint blog, which is an excellent blog. I urge everybody to go to his blog. It's a very centrist blog, left, right, middle. I mean, he lets them all have it, and you know, as I have been doing on my program. Like I said, next week it'll be Richard Vague, the founding associate of the American Respect website, who put all those ads in the papers last year or during the election about the foreign policy of the country. He's going to be on, and I'll be looking forward to talk to him. I've been after them since I first saw the ad, so I'm honored he's agreed to be on the program after all this time. Over a year I've been on them to get him on. And then Matt Unger from the American Centrist Party will be on, and we may have put on Justin before him or have a centrist 1-2 punch to end the night. I'm still trying to get Galactica guests or Stargate guests. The Stargate people, the actors want me to call them, so I'm trying to get a day off during the week so I can call them and work on it. So I'm still working on it, but So anyway, and we have our book report. I think it might be our next guest already, but I thought we want to get to our book report by. Oh, okay. All right. And that's Nick. Okay. Yeah, I guess. And that's joining us now is Nick from Blogebrity. Is that correct? Hello? Nick, are you there? Uh-oh. May have lost Nick. Nick, are you there, sir? Uh-oh. That's not good.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait until he calls
maybe
back.
Maybe he'll call back. Well, I didn't know if you were prepared to do a segment or not, because I didn't want to overburden you, get your duties right here. Let me pass him a note. Here, you're doing a great job as a producer now. I just wanted to, like, push, like, Harriet Myers was doing it.
Why did that note say I have to go pee?
I don't know. And because during the week they said Harriet Myers kept passing Bush notes back and forth for several years. So, you're the best governor there ever was in Texas. I'm like, oh, for Christ's sake, get off of it, woman. What's her problem? You don't put notes like that knowing they'll get in the public media. Maybe she didn't know, but, you're the bestest governor we've ever had. Oh, man.
She was kissing ass.
Yeah, she was. She did
so
a damn good job, and he bought
a
hook, line, and sinker. So, but anyway, if Nick's out there, hopefully he'll call back. And we'll talk about Blogebrity. I was looking to talk to him because he's, I don't see my name. I should be a Blogebrity. Hell, I talk to all these bloggers. Or did I say boogers? I meant bloggers. But he's got a nice little center. Look at that. See? Elvis, Jan Yonder, Terror Hoodies, Jeremy Wright. So hopefully he's a lot about the blog networks and everything. So, but anyway, until he calls in, we'll have our book report about the Battlestar Galactica magazine by Mark. Do you have your book report?
Yes. I can do the book report.
Yes. How was the Battlestar Galactica? Oops, the knob just moved. I don't know if that does anything or not, but...
No, it's fine.
His Eminence, our Imperious Leader, see that the humans remain entertained until the end.
There you go. Where's the fourth?
By your command.
Ah, there's the fourth one. I blow my eardrums out, but that's all right.
Voice is done.
Oof. What'd you do, fart?
No, my voice is just
okay.
Up.
Yes, so, yes. Mark's assignment last week was to give us a book review about the Battlestar Galactica magazine. So what'd you think?
I actually found some parts of it that I liked.
Really?
Yes.
Was it the report in the back about the Cylons?
No. What I actually liked was the building of the Battlestar story.
Ooh.
How they went through everything about behind the scenes, how they made all these different battle stars. Mm-hmm. They were all like kind of futuristic looking and everything. And then mm-hmm. one of the guys that was one of the art directors decided to make it so you could see all the spars and everything.
Wow.
Because they'd removed a whole bunch of armor from it to do something with it. They explained that in here where all the big spars that you see are actually supposed to have armor over the top of it, but they removed a whole bunch of it to make more ships.
Really?
Because this was supposed to just become a museum piece, and so
that's
they
right.
wanted people to be able to see what was underneath the armor and everything else to go along with
mm-hmm.
it was pretty interesting.
Yes.
They made all the different 3D models and everything way ahead of time. Didn't want to completely copy the old series, but they wanted to make things look new.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool.
Well, they did some nods towards the old show. I mean, the Battlestar itself is kind of a nod towards the old show. And then the Cylons, although they're wings now, they still have the little Cylon red eye going back and forth. So, I mean, that's part of the show as well. So, but I think we have Nick on the line from Blogebrity. Nick, you there?
Hey, I'm there.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Thank you for being on. We're just in the middle of a book report from our producer here, Mark. He gave him the Battlestar Galactica magazine, and he was reviewing it. So I apologize if we cut you off from before or whatever.
No problem.
And now this is Nick from Blogebrity. Tell everybody out there a little bit about your site.
All right. Well, we cover some of the viewers might have or listeners might have heard of Gawker.
Yes.
That they cover celebrities and media personalities. Mm-hmm. We basically take that one step further and cover Gawker and other blogs like, we cover the community Metafilter.com, and we cover other Gawker blogs like Defamer and Gizmodo and the Weblogs Incorporated blogs, who recently got bought out by AOL, like Engadget.
Yeah, I just had that story, Apple. Yeah. That is a huge story, huh? About the AOL buying up the...
Yeah.
What do you think of the boot?
Although, some of the buzz was actually that, if it's all right if I go off on this a little...
go ahead.
Cool. Some of the buzz actually was that it should have been a bigger sale. Some other, you know, leaders in the field were saying that it sold for 20 million, or actually, 22 million. I think with a couple extra bonuses possible if Weblogs Incorporated reaches some target ranks. And that's all, you know, rumor. They didn't officially release those numbers.
Yeah.
But for a network of 85 blogs, it turns out only about 30 of them are actually regularly published. So, I mean, AOL had to have researched this before they bought it, so they still thought it was worth it. But that's actually a pretty high rate, you know, considering, like, for 30 blogs, 22 million, that's really impressive that each group blog, you know, and these things have only been around for 2 years, for the oldest ones of them, to already get to that kind of value. I thought it was pretty impressive, but still, some other blog owners thought that it should have sold for even more.
Yeah, probably Hugh Hewitt or somebody. He thinks he's the god of blogs or something.
Oh, yeah,
he's just full of himself, isn't he? I guess he says here 25 million. The deal is 25 million.
I think that, like, some were reporting 25.
Oh.
But I was told by, like, some slightly inside people, 22 million.
Really?
Was the initial number. I'm pretty sure whatever we have up on Blogebrity is and what we've got. And just for the listeners, right now our URL is blogebrity.com/blog is where they'll find all the real good stuff. We have a splash page at blogebrity.com right now. And but in a couple days, the site's going to have some really huge changes.
Wow.
Like Friday around the afternoon we're targeting. If someone goes to blogeverity.com, it's going to look a lot sexier than it does right now.
Really?
Right now, it's, you know, that pink and white on black. And we're running on the Blogger system, the, you know, the Google, well, the thing Google bought.
Yeah.
Which, frankly, is probably the worst blog editing system anyone could possibly choose.
Yeah, well, that's also when I host the Subject to Discussion blog.
Huh?
That's also when it holds my...
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy... system.
Yeah, that's why I signed up for it. I'm not stupid.
You can pop up a Blogger blog in 5 minutes.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why it did take me about 6 minutes to figure out how to do it, and there are 2 minutes to put the thing up, you know.
Yeah.
But so you're going to change it. Wow. Now, what's the big thing going on in the blogosphere right now?
Right now?
Is it that B5 Media with, what's his name?
Jeremy Wright
and Duncan Riley and them?
Yeah, Duncan Riley was running his own weblog empire, was I think what he called it. And, yeah, I think it was Weblogs Empire. And apparently he's merging or joining with Jeremy Wright at B5 Media. I haven't gotten a chance to ask him about it yet. But as soon as they, you know, as soon as they're merging, we will publish some news on that. People are still talking about this Win AOL deal. Because one of their blogs, Hackaday, what Jason Calasanis didn't mention when he sold his network was that one of the blogs, Hackaday, which is one of the major ones, and this is one that Pete Rojas, whom Jason Calasanis poached from Nick Denton like a year or two ago before I started covering this stuff. Anyway, this blog was one of the major ones for the network. It was, you know, probably, it was when people were figuring out how much, you know, money each blog was probably worth, they figured Hackaday was one of the most popular, but it didn't sell to AOL because Hackaday pretty much makes a living off of doing barely legal stuff.
Ah.
You know, they're like breaking digital rights management and like just barely violating all sorts of fresh copyright laws, and Calasanis just didn't want AOL to end up suing itself, you know.
Really? Now,
yeah.
Now, and then, I'll be watching that. Do you go on Yahoo every at all? Because now Yahoo's added a blog search on there now, which everybody's saying is the best thing going, huh?
This is actually one area where I keep arguing with my, well, only a couple times. I've argued with my, with one of the founders of the site, Kyle Bunch, who has his own site, kylebunch.com. Yeah. Anyway, he and I have talked about whether blogs really should be considered journalism. And, you know, a lot of bloggers really like to say, we're replacing the mainstream media, bloggers are at the same level as journalism, but frankly, right now, what I see when I look at blogs is people linking to, you know, professional journalists.
Mm-hmm.
Now, bloggers are still linking to the New York Times and everything. So if Yahoo puts blog search right next to their news search, they're still, you know, putting them in a sidebar. So, first of all, some people are mentioning that that might make it look like they're sponsored links. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's where the sponsored links go on a usual results page or like a Google page.
Yeah.
So people are used to seeing that. So they might get confused about that, especially since, you know, most people searching Yahoo are still fresh to the idea of blogs.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would actually argue that that this is a good idea. They shouldn't integrate it fully with news, because right now, when people do a news search, they are expecting the major full articles that you can get from mainstream journalism that blogs still are not providing. Blogs are still, you know, the average post is like a fifth the size of the average news article, and it's usually just linking to a news article, so it's one extra step to take.
Yeah.
But if blogs get better at this, I mean, I'd really love to see some bloggers take it upon themselves to become journalists. Then I think they'll be ready, you know, to integrate.
Yeah. Now, do you see the blogs starting to lose their steam?
I really don't think so. No. I think they have the potential to eventually step in alongside a lot of mainstream media. And I don't think this sale of Weblogs, Inc. is the last network sale we're going to see. Right now, just today, I found out that Paul Scrivens, who runs the Fine Fools Network.
Oh, yes.
It's kind of a riff off of his Nine Rules Network, the number 9rules.com. And this new one, FineFools.com, and all the blogs that are linked to from there. If I can list here, he just wrote today that he wants people to write about automobiles, finance, television, movies, music, sports, fashion, men and women lifestyles, travel, software, Apple, Microsoft, open source, web 2.0, cycling, jobs, and card playing. He wants to build dozens of blogs because I think Scrivens sees that Weblogs Inc. deal and knows in 2 years
he could
do that.
He could just sell it to Google or Yahoo or something like that, huh?
Yahoo's a great. I really don't think Google's going to end up buying this content stuff. They bought Blogger.
Yeah.
They haven't done anything good with it, and they realized that like that's not their strong point. But Yahoo, they recently hired Kevin Seitz. War blogger, and are actually making a big marketing push out of sending him to every conflict on the globe for the next 2 years, I think.
I saw that, man. That's got to be expensive as hell for Yahoo to be sending him around. And Seitz, I mean, Seitz used to be on CNN, didn't he?
They have a big enough market cap that I forget again who said it, but someone just mentioned that theoretically, I think it was one of the editors at the Times or the publishers at the New York Times that said Yahoo theoretically could buy out all the journalists of the New York Times. I don't know if they could buy all the holdings of the New York Times, but like they could afford very easily to just right today hiring all those journalists.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they
have that kind of money at their disposal.
Wow.
So theoretically, nothing is stopping them from getting heavily into the content business. I think they're afraid also of becoming, well, of doing what Sony's been doing for the last decade and end up suing themselves all the time, stepping on their own feet. Because when you own, you know, when you own the content and you own the means to deliver that content, not only is everybody going to try to sue you for violating antitrust laws, but, you know, you're also going to have trouble having biases, you know, in your own system. People are going to accuse you. If Google started writing its own newspaper, how much would people trust the new Google News aggregator anymore?
That's true. Well, and then they have you know, the same thing with AOL and Time Warner. You know, they say AOL's lost its edge because now they're all part of this big conglomerate at Time Warner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although I don't feel it was ever really that AOL was ever an edgy company.
Yeah.
I mean, back when they were sending everybody CDs that we didn't want. I mean, I remember as
they
a
still
13-year-old. Writing a list of 101 things to do with AOL CDs, and it has not changed.
Yeah, I got mine as coasters in my house. I got AOL 3.0. Oh, that's lovely. How about AOL 4.5?
What are they up to? 10 billion hours free?
Yeah, and now they actually have given so many hours in the first month that they have to warp the space-time continuum to fit them in. They've been buying physics labs.
Absolutely. That's a Star Trek question. You must be a Star Trek fan, huh?
Yeah.
You're not a Battlestar Galactica fan?
I've never watched any of them.
Wow.
Not religiously.
Oh.
My dad would push his own little sister out of the way of the TV for the old fashioned Star Trek. But I'm part of that, you know, that lame kind of geek now.
Really?
That wants to have a little bit of the culture, the dressing, you know, in a way that
the new Galactica gives you all that.
Huh?
The new Battlestar Galactica gives you all. It gives you all the culture. It gives you all the sex you can ever use.
This is the newer, sexier.
Absolutely.
Sci-fi show.
I'll have to try
this out.
Oh, you missed Grace Park. One of the actors was stuck. There she is.
I don't give a frack.
There she is. That's Grace Park, Boomer from Bell. We thank her very much for being on the program. And they say on deliver. Speaking of delivering. I got a lot of sound effects. We got a lot of sound effects.
You got an entire soundboard?
Yeah. Well, no. Galactica bass. We got the. They used to have a dog on the original show called Muffet. And I, in one of my interviews, no showed a couple weeks ago. And there he is. And that's Muffet, the dog. You should play this back for your father. He'll know exactly who. There he is. Who right. Dag it is. So, but.
I'm sure he'll be very proud if I play him that.
But I mean, and then now who are the big stars in the bloggers here right now? I know I'm not, but I mean, who else is really big right now? I should be. I mean, you know, because I've been doing interviewing bloggers for like a year now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why I haven't.
You never heard of me, have you?
Up on my radar. I'll be subscribing to you guys' RSS feed because I'm always looking for other people who are paying attention.
I have been for a year. The election week of 2004, I brought on Joe from the Modern Voice. He's the first blogger.
Cool.
And it's pretty much been nonstop ever since. So, but it's been interesting. Everybody's got, you know, like Joe, I don't know if you talked to him at all, but he's a ventriloquist by day and a blogger by night, and he used to write for the Chicago Daily News. So that's
he
a journalist.
Do some video blogging of that.
Who? Me?
If he's a ventriloquist.
Oh, I like
try getting some video on, because... People love a cheap thrill.
Yeah.
Know? That's why Fark is so popular. And Boing Boing as well. Like
Bling Bling?
Boing Boing can slip in, you know, like stuff on copyright law.
Yeah.
But most of the time people want to see a guy drawing chalk on the sidewalk or, you know, some snake that ate an alligator. Did you see this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was
like
a big
really
news.
Popular thing.
Yeah, some snake in Florida tried to eat an alligator whole
and it burst. And it, like, ripped through the snake's side.
Yeah, the alligator tore through the snake's stomach. Yeah,
and
that was
loved that.
That was an amazing picture, wasn't it?
I watch like about 100 different blogs a day that I'm reading through, and all these blogs that are usually talking about, you know, like where the future of computer technology is going and Wither Web 2.0.
Yeah.
And then they're like, and here's a snake eating an alligator. Cool. From Fark. You know, I love that. Yeah. Is that there's a certain lowest common denominator, but it's not like a pandering thing, you know?
No. I mean, it's news. I mean, whoever thought of it, you see a snake trying to eat an alligator whole in your life, you know?
It's so fun.
Yeah.
And it's just great to see that. I see very few bloggers that really can keep up that total mean of professionality. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're in an industry where I consider Gawker and Wonkette the most professional bloggerities out there, and yet these are people who are making, you know, ass jokes all day.
Yeah.
They're making ass and dick jokes, and I consider them... refined.
Well, see, I should start doing that. Then I'll get some more attention. I try and run a clean show. This is like the NPR program of webcasts.
Oh, I see.
You know, I'm telling you.
I've now brought the level of it. The discourse down.
No, it's no problem. No, I've had some stars from the Galactica show on, like Katie Sackhoff. She's dropped the F-bomb on the program, you know. But,
nice.
I refuse to go there. You know, I'm trying to be an upstanding broadcast journalist here, you know what I'm saying? I said, maybe I should start dropping the F-bomb on the show. I might get more attention. I should start burping like the other shows on this side, you know. Bleh, you know, like Daily Noise Element. I start burping. But, it's great what you're doing. I like how you're keeping track of what's going on, because there's not one place where you can go to keep an eye on what's going on in the blogosphere.
No, including us, we're terribly behind.
No, you're doing a great job, because as soon as I found you, I don't know how I found your site at all. I don't know. I think it was from Joe Gandelman from the Modern Voice. I don't know. Somehow, I found yours. This is unbelievable, because you get everything there. Instead of going around, I usually go to Weblog Empire, and sometimes he updates it, sometimes he doesn't. And he's going through that big merger, so he's a busy man. You know, but I mean, it's unbelievable what you're doing.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I actually am always looking and always hoping every day that I'm going to find someone who's competing with us. That's the first. The thing I actually want to see is someone trying to outdo me, because that would be really fun.
Yeah, probably the closest one would be what Duncan Riley over there, because he does the Blog Herald.
He does the Blog Herald. Yeah,
he'd probably be the closest one.
Yeah, yeah. One thing he does a lot is he covers what several other blogs are doing very well, and I try as much as possible to avoid is that he covers like blogging tools and things. And it's great stuff, and what he's doing is very important.
Yeah.
But I want to see more comedy. I love seeing just commentary, you know? I know it's not, like, especially indie or anything to say, but I've always been a fan of David Letterman. And
really?
I really like the ability to pretend as if he knows the entirety of, you know, Hollywood and New York City.
Mm.
Which, I mean, he obviously can't possibly be on personal terms with all these people.
Yeah.
And yet he talks to millions of people as if he knows all these folks personally.
Yeah.
And has just thought this joke up himself.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I think the internet needs more Dave Letterman's, more Jon Stewart's, I guess.
There you go.
That's how I'll appeal to the avant-garde crowd, I guess.
There you go. Well, Nick, we'll let you go because we're almost out of time.
Awesome.
Thank you for being on the program.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Give me a good review on your site. I could appreciate some hits over here.
Definitely.
You know what I'm saying?
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Thank you. And that was Nick from blogeverity.com. It was a nice guest. You know, I mean, it's very informative.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. So, all right.
You mentioned one of my favorite websites.
Oh, which one's that?
Fark.com. I
my favorite blog is the worldaccordingtothegoof.com.
My second favorite site is www.slashdot.com.
There you go.
It's crazy, those ones.
There you go. And we got to finish your book review. We got 3 minutes to finish. Where are the girls?
Oh, we got to cut out early, though, because of the podcast stuff.
Oh,
we
got to
cut out about 2 minutes early. Anyway,
we could save your book review. Sorry, I didn't know if you'd be able to... and then next week is Richard Vague from AmericanRespect.com. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. And join us next week. Good night. Have a pleasant tomorrow.